Hey guys, I'm Henrik Lundqvist. Welcome to Club 30.
I'm Jay Liddell. Welcome.
So today we have a Rangers legend on the show, Mike Richter.
I was just trying to get my health back, and that's a scary thing, and I'd love to hear your perspective on that, because these are serious injuries. These aren't, you know, a bad ankle that you can limp around. I mean, this is your brain, in your case, your heart. And so that scared me enough to go, oh, I better pay attention to this a little bit. But when she told me, I'm not going to clear you to play, you're done, that I couldn't process. If I just stayed up in Montreal, I just said, I got to think about this. And I went for a walk. I'm like, I there's nobody I could call and just go, hey, I'm done. I just didn't want to mouth those words.
He's a very interesting guy. You know, after he stopped playing, he went back to school and really focused on environment, efficiency, and I mean, you as an engineer, you must love that stuff.
Totally. I mean, we could have gone forever geeking out on his next chapter. You guys, during this conversation, definitely geeked out on equipment. You know, it was a deep dive on goaltending.
Goaltending. And we've talked about similarities and differences between me and Mike throughout our careers here in New York. He played for 14 years. I played for 15 years. But there's definitely things there that connects us.
Yeah.
But the best thing about Mike, yeah, I mean, he's a fascinating guy, always a happy guy, but he's always been so supportive. So I'm extremely happy to have him here on Club 30 today. And I hope you guys will enjoy our conversation. So he played 14 years for the Rangers. He was, I think, one of the first Rangers I ever met in person. And I think you're one of the nicest people I ever met. Welcome to Club 30, Rangers legend Mike Richter.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, welcome. Full
circle. For being here. Yeah. So, you came in today kind of a little rough out there today, but the ride in was okay.
I just texted you and I'm like, yeah, the ride's easy. And then, of course, there's an accident, no bumper, poor lady's facing the wrong way on the cross county. So, yeah, it's New York traffic.
How much time do you spend in the city these days?
Not as much as I want. You know, I lived here in the last 10 years when I played, and it just, as you know, no matter where you're from, a farm in Canada, Europe, you come here, it becomes home really fast.
No doubt.
And it was a totally different environment. I grew up in a small town outside of Philadelphia. But it became so, you know what, you're in awe when you first come here. At least I was. Wow, big buildings and crazy people. But it's such an easy place to live and such an enjoyable place to live. And when you leave it, there's other great places, but you always miss the buzz. Yeah.
Did you feel like a city guy when you were here? And back then, so this is early 90s, mid 90s.
Yeah.
Were you guys out a lot? Clubs, restaurants,
yeah,
shows?
Yeah, I mean, all of it. And that's what you want as a young adult. It feels to me like everybody should spend some time here and just get to know this place.
Yeah.
The general kind of feeling was in the league that a small farm boy from Western Canada, I don't want to go to New York. That's crazy, you know? And I can remember the first time I came here getting caught in traffic. You know, I don't know how to hail a cab. Everybody's moving. They all seem like they're out to get you. And then you meet people and they may be busy. Like, New Yorkers aren't rude. They're just busy.
That's right.
Hey, do you know where? No, I got to go.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time.
They'll take you in their house. They are the most open-armed people.
I actually love about it because they might, if they recognize you on the street, they don't really have time for you. They might acknowledge you, but then they have to go.
Yeah, that's the beauty of New York.
Hey, you're you. Goodbye.
Yeah. Great job. I got to go. That's so refreshing.
It is actually refreshing.
So I always enjoyed
it. Yeah, I felt like a New Yorker, though, to answer your question. We did go out, and I think living here allows you to, you know, you can go crazy wherever you want to go, but New York's got everything that you want. And I always loved the ability to do either. On the time you had a green light to go out, you could go out and have fun. When you're in the playoffs, you need to just hunker down. You know, you can get a great meal after a game. You can take a cab home. I found it to be a really good place to recover.
Yeah.
And most of what you do when you're not playing is go out, see shows, go to a good, you know, restaurant, see some music, whatever it is.
Are you a music guy?
You know, I love it. I have no musical talent. So, I mean, I always envy your ability to do that. And if I could, I would. But I just love it. Live music's an amazing thing, no matter what form it is.
No doubt.
So do you go, when you go to shows here, is it Broadway or you go to the Garden for big rock concerts?
All of them. You know, I used to love going down to the Beacons. I like the smaller venues where you really, like, you can just hear the people and you almost touch them. It's amazing. But, you know, you go to the Garden and it's crazy. Billy Joel, Gravy and I were there last year. It's amazing. Everybody knows them, but that's an experience.
I mean, I've seen you at the Garden now a bunch of times, and how do you feel walking in there now? Like, we had a feeling when we were playing, obviously, there was a lot of pressure and stress and expectations, but what do you feel today when you walk in there?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. It's a difference between that was your office when you're playing. You go there and it's all business, man. It's fun.
Yeah.
But you're preparing, you walk over and you know what you're doing. You know what you're there for. Mm-hmm. And it's the difference between walking to your office and walking to your living room. Now it's your home. And you just, we're all fans, right? That's how we started and love the game, and the game keeps getting better. And, you know, went and watched you, and then went and, you know, now going to watch Sturken. I mean, pretty gifted for fans to go and watch great, great athletes like that. And you appreciate it as a goalie, you know, the nuances and all that. So I find going, you still get a little nerves, like you want the team to win in the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. But it's a totally different thing. It's not your office. You're there to be entertained, and you are. It's a great show.
I remember every time I watched hockey when I was active, I enjoy watching it, but I watched it to study. Mm. I educated myself watching how certain teams play, but also the goalies. I would watch them. It's like, wow, okay, he made the save that way. And so it was always a part of my brain that kind of, I couldn't really relax. I was like studying.
Yeah.
But now watching it's just as a fan of the sport. I mean, it's amazing to watch live, the energy. I thought about it the other day. I was there. It was a Friday night, and the place was just rocking.
Yeah.
You know, to be a hockey fan, especially in New York, at Madison Square Garden on a Friday night when the team wins, I mean, it's a good place to be.
Let's go back a bit to Igor.
Yeah.
Is there connective tissue between Mike to Henrik to Igor? Is there things that you see in him that he's doing something completely different based on his genetics? Or can you see this evolution of,
you know, goaltending? I'll answer it one way.
Yeah.
And that is just, I can speak for Hank and Igor, and it's excellence. Everybody's got their own personality. You know, Marty Brodeur was a different looking goalie than Henrik.
Sure.
But they both stopped the puck. Uh-huh. And it's not fair to look at Igor and say, oh, you got to fill Henrik's shoes, because you can't. There's only one Hank, but there's only one Igor. And he's got his own strengths, his own weaknesses, and it's really cool to see him come in and have the success that he has, which has been amazing. Not too many people get built up like that and then come in and fulfill it, and he has. But he's got his own strengths, and I think that's a really important thing. Give people the space to be who they are. You know, the guy I always think of is Hasek.
Yeah.
Nobody was Hasek. But the end, he stopped the damn biscuit. Mm. And that's what you're there to do. Yeah. And so New York fans have been so fortunate to see so many great players come through here, but particularly in goal. You know, what organization fills the shoes of Hank with Igor? That just doesn't happen. So, you know, everybody's an all-star, right? In goal? No, but we're lucky we got that.
To me, goaltending, to what impresses me the most right now with the best goalies in the game, they're so efficient. The way they move, the way they recover. I remember, you know, coming into the league and how much the game has changed, how much the goaltending has changed. And towards the end of my career, you know, you start looking around and say, I wish I could do that. I wish I could move like that. But in the end, obviously, it comes down to stopping the puck. So a lot of it is the mindset. But so when you just break down the technique of the goalies today, they're so efficient, how they move, how you can use the equipment in a certain way to benefit from it. And Igor, I think he's such an efficient goalie with his stance, the way he reads the play as well.
He reads the play so well. You rarely see him surprised, right? You know, you're going to get in positions where you have desperation. Somebody bumps into you. There's an odd rebound. There's a tip at the last moment. And he battles to get the puck the way Hasek would, the way Hank did, the way all good goalies need to. You can't give up on it. And but mostly he's just waiting for it, which I think almost makes it seem like he's not as good as he is, because it doesn't look that flashy, but he's in the way of it all the time.
And patience is one of the most important things. I always talk about this too. Like, you can have all the skill in the world, but if you're not patient, the shooter's going to pick you apart. So the best goalies are usually the most patient goalies.
And, you know, if you're 6'5", like Vasilevskiy, it's a little easier to be patient. I wasn't a big goalie. Hank was kind of the prototypical, you know, good-sized goalie, but not a monster. And so you have less leeway. And so, you know, you look at Jarry or anybody else who's a little bit smaller, and your patience, there's a premium on that because you know you have to get there. You, mm-hmm. you don't have these long legs that can recover as much. So you have to be very exacting. And I think Shesterkin, I wouldn't say he's undersized, but he's not a massive guy.
Right.
6'1" is kind of on the lower average, end right now.
Big time.
Yeah. When I came into the league in 05, 6'1", I was like, oh, it's decent size.
Miniature goalies.
But now it's 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", even. It's kind
small
of
forwards, big goalies. It's changed.
Is there any sports in your life today?
Well, I mean, I kind of been a fan of all sports. I mean, I was horrible at basketball, but love watching it, you know, the passion in that. Football's fun. I played it as a kid and loved that. But honestly, I was just whipping through the channels the other day. I was watching an 800 meter race for just track and field. And it's competition's fun to watch. And all sports, we can talk about goaltending in particular, has evolved to such a high level right now. But the game of hockey all around, you look at what Connor McDavid does. Mm. I was watching highlights of, you know, some of the best goals this year. And they're doing unthinkable things. That just didn't happen 30 years ago, the way these guys going through their legs and whatnot. Right. But all sports, better training, better nutrition, better mental toughness. Mm-hmm. And so you have a better athlete. And I just find it compelling to watch all sports.
A lot of creativity. Like, back to your point, Mike, that the things you see today, we didn't see that 10, 15 years ago. Like on breakaways, especially shootouts, what guys are doing. And even under pressure, they come up with solutions that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you didn't do that.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a huge part of growing the game, the creativity. I think it's important to get better. I think that's how goaltending has improved a lot. You try to be creative in how to make a save.
And I think you always have to have the fundamentals. You know, you look at somebody like McDavid, he skates fast, he shoots well, he sees the ice well, all these things that you need to develop as a young kid. But then, you know, there's a highlight of him going through his legs and putting it far side. And that wasn't a hot dog move. That was, I did it with a purpose. Right. There was a stick in the way here. I shielded it with my leg. I went through my legs in the last moment at high speed and placed it, you know, perfectly in the corner. But everything he does, he seems to take very quick assessment of the situation and say, here's my option. Boom, and does it. It's just that creativity. You find a way to get the job done when the basics don't apply anymore.
So, Mike, you grew up with 6 siblings.
Yeah.
Like, I have 2, and it felt crowded at times. Like, how was it to grow up with 6 siblings, and how did you get into hockey?
Good question. The sibling thing was great. I was the youngest of 7, so, I mean, it just got easier. You know, I had fairly strict parents, and my sisters were born in the late 50s, and then I was mid-60s. By then, you know, my parents had seen everything, so a lot of the expectations were diminished, and you know, having 4 girls and 2 guys go ahead in the 60s, 70s, they're kind of like, oh, okay, maybe we're missing each other on what our expectations are. But and honestly, we all got along really well. So that was just fun. And they were very supportive. So, you know, going out to your first games and whatnot, they were always there. My older 2 brothers played hockey. My oldest was a defenseman. But the closest, Joe, was a goaltender. So that was awesome because I could, you know, we weren't playing on the same teams until we were in high school, but we'd always learn, figure out different equipment and work out things. And we had this great coach from Ontario who had played at University of Pennsylvania. That's where the Flyers used to practice. So he would come in and, you know, when you're a real young goalie, having a guy that played in college, it was something else. You know, right. He would come in and, you know, we tried different techniques to how to save him because he has such better puck control and all that kind of stuff. And it was a great place to go up and play. The Philadelphia Flyers then were winning the Stanley Cup. They're, you know, one of the best teams in hockey in the early to mid 70s. So that's just when we were growing up going, I want to be Bernie Perron. I want to be Bobby Clarke.
It must have been amazing to have a brother and talk about goaltending,
so cool.
the details in the game, because that's what you want to do. As a kid, when you're playing goal, there's so much you want to learn and pick up and try and analyze.
Think of 2 shorter versions of Valley. Just talking to each other all day long. Yeah. Like, how did you do that? I like to tie my skates like this. Everything from equipment to how to save a penalty shot. Like, that was cool. And because he was older than I was, it just was so beneficial to me because he was playing against tougher, bigger guys. My older brother would have me come in sometimes to play men's league. So I'd like take a nap and go, you know, to a beer league at 11:30 and be playing against guys that could move the puck. So I think it always benefits that younger guy to play up a little bit. Yeah.
So when I look at both of our careers, I see differences, but I also see a lot of similarities. You know, we played for one franchise 14, 15 years, But I also think about, you know, how the game ended for us, where, you know, the will to play was there, but our bodies would not allow it. For me, it was the heart issues. For you, concussions. Like, how was that for you to deal with and to finally make the decision to walk away from the game of hockey?
It, very difficult and a lot to process in some ways, and in other ways, a little bit easier. And I mean this by the following, like, nobody, very few people, I should say, give up the game easily. So when I retired, I was 36. I was mentally tougher. I knew myself, which is key. I had evolved along with the game. You know how to get yourself to play your best. Now, your body is not what it was a decade before then. So you're not quite as strong. You're not quite as, you get injured more and all those kind of things. But you know what it takes to win. You've experienced success. And then you just want to repeat that forever. And you keep getting better, right? That's one of the things we love about Billy Joel. At 70, he's probably better than he was at 40, which is incredible. Can you imagine getting another 10 years of Hank in net? What would he be? Right. But your body doesn't allow you to do that. And so even Mike Jordan had to walk away from basketball sometime. He's a little bit slower, even though he's great when he retired. Wayne Gretzky, the same thing. So there's this kind of, oh my God, I don't want to give that thing up. I've worked my entire life, quite literally, to be at this point at, in my case, 36, and I've never been better in some ways mentally, but your body's now telling you you got to. But having an injury, you know, at some point a doctor looks at you and says, I'm not going to clear you to play. Mm-hmm. And that's horribly difficult to hear. You just can't even, what? Like, I'm feeling better now. I think I, no.
But, but to your point, it was, it's a concrete thing.
It's a concrete
it's not
thing.
Ambiguous.
And you don't have to, in a way, take responsibility for it. Of course, you can override that and take out your own insurance and hope you don't get hurt and all this kind of stuff. But in a way, that decision was made for you. So it comes with its own bag of emotions, but it almost makes it more cut and dry.
So were you were in peace with...
No. No. I have to say, I went to a doctor. I was talking to a neurologist up in Montreal, and... You know, I got hurt and I didn't feel terrible, but I didn't feel right. And it ended up being a fractured skull. I came back that summer, played, felt good in training camp, got hit again, but November 5th in a game against Edmonton. And I just felt something's different. And, you know, practice a couple times, but you're trying to get better and you think it's going to wear off. But instead of getting better, it got a little worse and just sort of a low grade, I don't know, grayness descends upon you and headaches and all that kind of crap. So the lady said, look, you got to take some time off. You don't want to get these things consecutively. Problem. But by the time I came back, maybe 3 months later to have another checkup, I was just trying to get my health back. And that's a scary thing. And I'd love to hear your perspective on that. Because these are serious injuries. These aren't, you know, a bad ankle that you can limp around. I mean, this is your brain, in your case, your heart. And so that scared me enough to go, oh, I better pay attention to this a little bit. But when she told me, I'm not going to clear you to play, you're done. Like, honestly, I knew, like, in my heart, like, you know, intuitively, like, you got to do something to get your health back. It's not normal. But that I couldn't process. I took almost a day to even tell my wife. I just stayed up in Montreal. I just said, I got to think about this. And I went for a walk. I'm like, I there's nobody I could call and just go, hey, I'm done. I just didn't want to mouth those words, you know, because I had to, in
and
a way, I
had to say it out loud.
To say it out loud was horrifying.
And once you do it, it's powerful.
It's very powerful. And it sounds silly now, but honest to God, I'd love to hear your version of that. But it was hard for me to even attempt to own that for a bit. And then, you know, you do when you process it and you go on with life. But that was a hurdle, big time.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when they told me, like, okay, you can't go to training camp. You need to go and have an open heart surgery. And back to your point, like, the decision was made. There was no gray area where I could go back and forth. Should I not? It was like, okay, we got to do this. The recovery was great, but I think the toughest part for me was then the inflammation came and it kind of had a few setbacks. But I remember, you know, the day when I decided, I sat in the car and I was back in Sweden over the summer. I was like, okay, I'm done, you know? And
was that a burden lifted or was that?
Because, I mean, the year was so strange to me because of the surgery and but I tried to come back a couple times that year and I believe that I would, but, but in the end I knew it was, I need everything to go my way for it to happen. So I kind of had a feeling that it would be.
It's so interesting because you and I had a conversation that summer prior to, right? I mean, when you were leaving the Rangers, you're like, you still had the desire to play. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you do as any performer, any athlete for sure. You have to, doesn't matter what the odds are, you know what you have to do. So you're like, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And if it's open heart surgery between me and getting to where I want to go, then I get it. But that reality has to come in at some point when it's your health, when it's that, you know, this is not an elbow that may be hurting later on in life when you're trying to play tennis or something like that. Open heart surgery is a big deal. And I think it's almost really, no one can tell you, you got to figure it out yourself at some point and just own it. And then it's like, you know, you had young kids, I did too. So now you're starting to go, I got a responsibility that's outside myself here to start figuring this one out. But that's that was a crazy path for a little while.
Because I still loved it so much. Exactly. Coming to the rink every day to compete. And you realize, you know, what's been driving you as a human for so long. Since a kid, you wanted that competition. You know, you want to see how far can I take it right now. Doesn't matter what you did 10, 15 years before that. But right now, where how far can I take it? And just the competition aspect of it was something I really enjoyed every day going in the rink, even after surgery. And, you know, I thought, like, I'm coming back. Man. I feel great.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think to people who haven't played, you know, that's not about stopping a hockey puck. It's much more about the challenge is against yourself. Like, can I put myself in a position to be successful? And, there's an all-encompassing aspect of playing at a high level or doing anything at a high level that is so addictive that it's very tough to just put that aside and say, all right, I'm not that anymore.
Yeah. So where do you put that now, you know, with time, obviously, it would be in perspective. Where did you put that energy? Or how did you put the energy?
Not to be too dramatic about it, but you know, we've all experienced death. And I, you know, remember when my father passed away, I was just going into college at 18 in Wisconsin. And, you know, all you can think about is the loss.
Yeah.
And then it dissipates over time. You start thinking, well, he was a great guy. I had a great opportunity. Other kids never see their dad or have a bad father, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that kind of pattern in my, you know, case repeated itself. Like, all I could think about is, oh my God, I should be playing. I want to be working. You know, it's now June. I should be getting my schedule together and working out or whatever it is. You think about what you don't have. And then it you know, even the idea of retiring the jersey, I wasn't thrilled by that. It just, next to playing, it didn't mean anything until then you start the process and go, my God, it turns from what I lost to how freaking lucky was I to have that opportunity?
Yeah.
And then you're just like, then you're at peace. I'm like, I still get up sometimes. You know, you go to the garden, your number's hanging there. You're hanging out with great people that are part of that family that have experienced the same thing. You just go, you know, I wish I could still play, but you can't. And now I just think about how freaking lucky. Great people, great opportunity, great town.
And you're so right. It's a sense of loss when you walk away from sports.
Yeah.
And you have to mourn a little bit. Like,
you mourn.
You need time. But then once you turn that corner into gratitude.
Unreal.
That's when you turn the corner. Like, you just appreciate everything you got to experience, all the friends you met. And to your point, Mike, like how lucky you were to play that sport for a living. But that's, to me, was, you know, I was really in peace with walking away from the game of hockey because I was so grateful for everything that I experienced.
And you had said those words, and that's a really good thing because you see some people and they're not ready to go. And you have to be, that's why, in a sense, being injured takes that burden of decision away for you. I think if you were just fading and you still had a little bit to give, it's a harder choice in a sense, right? There's difficulties in either case. When someone tells you can't do it, now it's taking your own power away to make that choice, which is not fun. But the flip side is you have to own that damn choice, and it's coming. It's coming at some point, whether you're at 35, 40, or 45, at some point you're like, And when Gretz retired from the Rangers, you know, that was the thing. I think everybody, if you look back there, everybody was, you know, teary eyed, and he was the greatest player that had played in the game, and he's hanging him up. I think he scored 20 some goals that year. He still could play. And he just said, no, it's time. And the thing that made it feel good was how at peace he was with it. And that's you got to get to that place of gratitude. And I think it's a totally different world.
And have you changed at all as a person, not having hockey in your life? Or you exactly the same. Like every time I meet you, you are so happy, positive. No, really, it's great to be around you, Mike. And were you like that playing? Or have you changed over time?
You know, I think we're all moody. You know, if the game doesn't go well, I wasn't the happiest fella. And I think there's a level of selfishness that you have as an athlete that you have to have. The world revolves around getting your sleep, your nutrition, preparing for the game, playing this game. Great, we won that game, but now we got another one. We're in the finals now. Whatever it is, it's just there's always the next game. So when is it? You're never almost present. You're only present when you're on the ice, right? It's when you're thinking about the next shot, and then it's like preparing for the next game. And so I think what I do like about it is having a young family. It's not about me anymore. You know, now it's about other people, and you know, nobody gets through this game without a lot of support from the people around them, families. And so I had a lot of that. And I'm, again, part of the gratitude is like, well, you know, a lot of people put their life on hold for me, my wife, my kids, all that kind of stuff. And I can remember my son was starting to talk. And, you know, when you're a rookie, you're like, hey, we're going to Chicago. Great. You know, guys, what are we doing? You know, when you're 35 and you got some kids at home, you know, my son was like, come home, dad. And you're kind of like, oh my God,
yeah,
I'm going to sit in a hotel room by myself for 2 days while, you know, I come back and he's walking now, you know? And so I think it was cool that the timing in my life was nice to have a young family. So you can kind of focus on that a little bit more.
Be more present. I feel like that's present. The biggest thing for me as well. You touched on it, that so much time goes towards preparation, and then you play the game, you're definitely in the moment, and then afterwards you're thinking about what just happened. Yeah. So you're never really in the moment.
Yeah, talk to me in 20 years
when I retire. You know, and there's so many I remember this when I was playing. It was easier when we were winning because then you were happy and we were enjoying the time, but a lot of times you were losing and you couldn't really enjoy things around you, even though it was just right there in front of you.
Yeah, it's a difference. And I think when you're on a winning streak in a team game like that, they don't have to pay you. It's just, that's just fun. I would pay them to be in that position, but it is pretty miserable when you're not winning. And the more you have a level of expectation of yourself, the more miserable you are in a sense, because you never quite get to where you want to be and you keep trying to do that, which is in and of itself fun. But when you're not performing or the team's not winning or you're not meeting expectations, it's, you know, if you care, it matters to your life and it affects you. So I think that aspect of it is like, you know, I always want the Rangers to win, but it's not on your shoulders to make sure it happens. Right. And that's a difference. So you can go to that game and kick back and watch as a fan. So
let's get a little goalie nerdy here. I want to talk a little bit about your style.
Should I call Valley?
Yeah, exactly.
Bring some analytics in.
A lot of nerd.
Yeah. No, but when it comes to your style, I remember you were such a strong skater. And I mean, so powerful. You were way more aggressive than the way I played it. Mm. But I couldn't do it. You could.
Yeah.
Like, was that something early on that you worked on, like your legs, your strength? You must have been extremely explosive.
I did work on it. And, you know, it's funny. My older brother was a goalie. And so he's 3 years older than I am. And we would work on stuff. Like, we would get like training manuals from the Russian national team and all this. We're in Philadelphia. So I always felt like I was a disadvantage. You know, the guys in Ontario, you know, what are their peers doing? I always thought, my God, I'm behind the eight ball. I got to work harder. And that probably helped me a little bit. You know, you think, oh my gosh, these guys are playing 80 games. I'm playing 40 games. I better work twice as hard. And so I did a lot of just training off ice, which did help. Not being a big goalie, you know, my lateral movement was good and all of that. But, you know, I think you have to be careful what you focus on, because if you worry about just explosiveness, that's great. You're explosive, but are you reading the play? You know, you got to put it all together. And I think the best players have a balance of all that. You know, it's not Shesterkin, we were talking about, reads the play well, but it's not like he can't get laterally. And what did you not do well, right? So you were able to move, you were able to read, you were able to be aggressive when you needed to be, but not when you shouldn't. And I had a tendency to maybe force the future, chase the puck a little bit when you're not feeling well. When you're feeling great, you're just, it'll come to you. And so that was something I always had to kind of battle with as a player, because you want to win. And I know you've gotten into that same thing. You want to win. So you want to win the whole game in the first period. And you can't do that. You have to just be patient, trust the process, trust your training, trust your team, and allow it to come. And so that was something that was hard. But I think that training, in a way, there's almost no excuse. If you want to be good, there's a lot you can do yourself. And you have to as a goalie, because you can't always rely on, do I have five shooters today? I don't. I better do some crease movements, you know.
And I guess also learn to play to your strength, right?
Good point, yep.
Yeah. For me, I wasn't very explosive. I remember, I'll never forget this. There was like a tryout for a junior national team at 16 or 17. Me and my brother, we went there. Some of the best 40 players in Sweden at the time. And we were probably the worst guys there on the testing. And I just realized, like, I'm not very fast. I'm not that strong.
You mean like the off-ice testing?
Off-ice testing. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think that's an upside. When Brian Leetch came, so he was drafted, I think, 86. I was 85. And people were booing when Brian was drafted. Like, they were like...
Because they saw the combine numbers.
159-pound
right.
Chubby little guy from a high school. And
six-inch vert.
Yeah, six-inch vertical, right? Right. And so... But what do you think about that? He's able to play on a national team at 160 pounds and kind of weak. He hasn't lifted weight in his life. What happens when you start giving him the training that a New York Rangers would have? And guess what? He ended up being the fittest guy on our team. And the dude, as you saw, could stay out there for basically the entire game. You know, he's penalty kill, power play, regular shifts, up against their toughest guys and just wouldn't tire. And so if you can... actually perform at the 40 best players in Sweden are great players. If you're the 40 best player in Sweden that's hasn't taken advantage of kind of modern workouts, one of those levers, look out. Because if you're motivated, you're going to use it, and then you're going to escape.
But at the same time, I mean, throughout my career, I was in decent shape, but I was still not that explosive. But again, you have to learn to play to what you have, right?
Exactly.
So for me, it made sense to not be as aggressive. It would have been very hard for me to move the way you moved.
Right, because then you couldn't recover. Right?
And I remember working with Benny over, 15 years. We had different goalies come in. And the foundation, yes, it needs to be the same. But then you need to allow you be you.
Yep.
And like, I can't copy what other guys, some guys come in and they're extremely good on their feet because their legs are big and strong. Yeah, it's like, and he would tell me, like, Henke, you can't do that. You got to stay back.
Don't be that guy,
Be you.
That's what you're saying is, I'm not Vasilevskiy. He's 6'5". He's got his own strengths. I'm never going to be that thing. Mm. So where am I? And you got to figure that out.
So we touched a little bit on the skating part. But then it's funny because every time I was at the rink, Cass, this is the Rangers trainer, equipment trainer. He is amazing, by the way. But he had all these old equipment up there.
Yeah.
Same guy through... all the errors?
Yeah, basically, all my years. Still there. Did you have Cass all your years?
He came in while I was still there.
Yeah.
But here's how good this guy was. He was working when we used to practice in Rye, and he worked at a little equipment shop there, and somebody had a problem with their skates, go see Cass. If it was out of the ordinary, this guy. You have a hurt thumb, and you got to get some kind of pad there, go see Cass. And, I mean, this to me is him in a nutshell. I remember I did hurt my hand. I had some kind of thing. I couldn't move my thumb. And he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do on that, but give me the night and I'll come back with something tomorrow. And it was like, just this oracle. It's like, okay. And sure enough, the next morning he's like, I think I got it. And he comes up with this like form-fitted piece of plastic that was bendable in a certain spot and would have to, be attached two places. And then he painted it so you couldn't see it. Yeah. So the other team couldn't figure out that you were injured. The guy sort of thought like a goalie. He never played goal, but he's like, how do you move? Okay, I got it.
It was art.
It was art.
And I remember seeing your equipment up there, and we kind of laugh about it. Because the rules changed, too. My first year back in 05, the rules changed how wide your pads could be.
Right.
But your pads were kind of narrow up top, really wide down low.
Yeah,
and we just look at the things Cass added. And
also a different style, right? So even the pads themselves, you didn't go down as much. When I first came in the league, guys would stand straight up. I mean, it was just not really an athletic stance because you're trying to cover the five hole, which is awful. And then players get you to move and you got to open up, take a step, and they're chucking it through there. Whereas guys nowadays have their legs a little bit far apart, much more athletic stance. But the equipment evolved into kind of supporting that different play. And it's really the European game is so left-right. It's not just north-south. Yeah. And so the goalies have to be way better at moving nowadays laterally. But it's, you look back and just go, that's not even when Patrick Waugh was like, oh, he's that butterfly type goalie. That's never going to last. And it's like, I think it might.
Yeah. And so what's the next evolution? How often does the league take a look at some of these regulations?
Well, I think, and this was a big conversation back in 05 because it was a big change going from, was it 14 to 12 inch? It
might have been 12 to 10.
12 to 10 even. And, and I remember that summer, big. It's like, the puck is almost hitting me on the outside.
Yeah. And the balance is, we don't want the goalie just to be a giant pillow and, you know, 6x4 stuff in that net and use no skill. The flip side is you're going to get hurt if you start minimizing these things. So the kind of the balance was protect the goalie, but don't make this thing pure blocking, you know, so we can shave down the arm pads, not so much that they're going to get injured, but it's hard. And everybody's going to come up with different creative ways.
I honestly think we're at a good place right now.
Seems like it. And it's stable for
because
some time.
They changed everything, pants, arm and chest, pads, and you just had to adjust to it. Yep. When it just happened, it was challenging, but then you get used to it, and now you watch the goalies play. I think
presumably they changed it to get scoring up.
Yes. Right. I mean, in the end, that's what you want.
But I always thought when they change these things, if you're more skilled, it benefits the better goalie.
Yeah.
Anybody can sit there with a, you know, 6x4 pads, you know, strapped to the backside, and, you know, so what? Yeah. But, you know, Hank's pretty exacting. So if you're an average goalie and you have to be exacting versus a very talented goalie that has to be exacting, that guy's going to win.
Yeah, I remember over the years, because I was always curious about my equipment and how to adjust it or if the straps in the back, the weight of the pad. And the time I was really getting into it was the games I didn't play.
Yes.
Every time I was on the bench, I was always looking at my...
What other guys are doing?
What can I do? So Cass always knew this. Like my day off, he knew, I'm going to have to work.
Get the notepad out.
Yeah. So then after the game, I was always in the locker room talking to him. It's like, hey, for the practice tomorrow, do you think we can do this, change that?
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And early on, it was fine. But over the years, it's like he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But then
he's just yesing you to death. Yeah. We got that. It's in the mail.
And but then you were excited coming in the next day for practice.
You
want to see what he did. Yeah.
And did any of those cast mods make it into production stuff eventually? Or did that define like a new...
I think right now a lot of goalies using, what do you call that? It's like a little strap on the skates for them to put the strap through.
So it would just adhere to the foot better, the pad, so it wouldn't turn?
I'm trying to... What do you call that? It's like a little loop. Exactly. Yeah. There's a loop on skates now. I remember started using
almost
that.
Almost like a pant loop, huh?
Yeah. Well, we put it on the skate so the strap wouldn't go up.
It used to go up your Achilles. So
that little loop definitely helped.
That was Cass?
I don't know if it was. I mean, some people say that.
We'll give him the credit.
We give Cass the credit.
It's called the Cass loop.
Cass loop.
Yeah, remember that.
Surprised I didn't know that.
But what you need to know about him was everybody's a little bit different. And so maybe Shesterkin has, you know, doesn't like the strap touching the back of his calf, and he can adjust it in a manner. He is so customized because everybody plays slightly different, has a different body and wears different and then gets injuries. I can remember how he, you know, changed skates for Leachy or whatnot. And Brian had these old pair of Graf skates that he just liked and didn't like the new version of them, said, just like resurrect these things. So he'd go through and like bolster them up. And, you know, it was amazing. Like he could manufacture almost anything. And that's a real skill because great players think about these things in a way that others might not. And I think great players do that because they really understand it. You know, there's always funny stories about Mess. You know, he would come up and be like, Cass, you got to move my blade, you know, quarter of an inch this way.
Yeah.
You know, eighth of an inch this way. And when he'd stand up on the bench, he's gone like kind of back and forth. He could feel he's feeling the blades. Cass just like, oh, here it goes, you know. And Cass, got it. Yeah. Take the thing off between shifts. And he's literally rivets off, blade move, back on. Yeah. And so it's not easy, but if it's going to make a great player that much better, you do it. You know?
Yeah. You talked earlier about similarities on our careers. Yep. So after hockey, it's fascinating. I've been reading up on a lot of things you've been doing. And so you, first off, you went back to school when you were done.
Yeah.
And focus been efficiency, environment.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because you kind of just follow your passions a bit. Not unlike hockey. I loved playing. So it wasn't like I made a choice to go and play. I did that. You know, we did it as kids and we just kept doing it. At some point, someone tells you to stop. It could be when you're 13. It could be when you're 33, but you do what you love to do. And I was fortunate enough to do it for a while, but I was into that. I was always thinking, you know, like engineering wise, it'd be so cool. You know, you see what Elon Musk has done. He's changed the way automobiles go. He's changing the way houses are heated, all kinds of things. Going to Mars. I'm not an engineering mind necessarily, but I've always been kind of captivated by that. And I thought that would be a cool place to go. But school represented more than just like going in and getting classes. I kind of wanted to finish what I started because I left after 2 years at Wisconsin. And by then I had a family. My mom was a bit older and, you know, they're like, just stay in the East and finish it up. And I was fortunate to get into Yale, which was a great experience. But it also provided me, I think when you're lost, when you leave, just something, anything structure. That can hold structure. Yeah. And it was so helpful. I was interested in what I was doing. It was a beautiful place, great people. But also, it's hard when someone says, oh, hey, Hank, you just retired last week. What are you doing now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the quick thing to say, I don't know, I'll scout, I'll do anything. You know, there's a big void in your life, big void, emotionally, all that kind of stuff. So at least I could say, well, I got homework due Thursday, so I better get
my ass. You had a schedule.
Going. Yeah, I had a schedule.
It's a different world,
but it was also nice though, because my kids were young. We were living on the coast of Connecticut, kind of north of New Haven, and I could come home, or if one of them's sick, I don't have to be at class the next day. It's not like I missed a hockey game. It was just, it was easier. It was hard because, you know, getting the gears going again is hard to do, just the reading and writing and everything. But it was fun. You know, go out picking clams up with your little guy at the beach or something like that. It was a pretty important and mellow time to go from one career to kind of ramp up another. And I did just, it was fortunate in a lot of ways. I had that connection from one life to another. And it was really helpful. And it was fun, just fun being with my little kids and great going back to school. I loved it. But, you know, if I hadn't been almost 40 when I finally got my degree, I would have kept going. But it's like probably time to get going in real life, you know?
Yeah.
And did you use anything from your hockey career?
Yeah.
When you moved into this next chapter of your life? Is there anything that stands out that I really use that in my next?
I think one thing, you're an entrepreneur, you know this, anything worth pursuing, you're going to get your ass handed to you sometimes. You're going to lose. Mm-hmm. You play a goal, you're going to get lit up.
Sure.
You're going to make mistakes. You're going to be the goat on the team that one day, you know, I don't mean greatest of all times. I mean like the scapegoat, the guy who didn't get it done. And you have to recover from that. You have to figure that out. You have to improve from that. Mm-hmm. And look, you know, being an entrepreneur is great when you see, you know, what Facebook did. Oh, they started to adore them and now looking on their billions of dollars. But, you know, there's a lot of difficulties along the way. And I think that's something you just have to understand and take into perspective. It's not a perfectly straight line. There's ups and downs all along the way, a couple steps back before you take a step forward. And so I've really learned. I've had good people around me. I've got two great partners now that have had a lot of experience, but nothing's guaranteed ever, just like sport. And so I think that's those lessons. I think, you know, does stopping a hockey puck apply to energy efficiency? Not necessarily, but does preparation, does dealing with defeat, does course correcting when things don't go well, does, you know, figuring out how to make your team work well, working within a team? Yeah, those things really do. And I'm still learning a lot, which keeps you hopefully kind of.
But is winning still important?
Yeah, it always is. I mean, you want to have success, and you want to have success to build what you're trying to accomplish. But you also, it's a motivator. You know, you feel good about things and you're saying, hey, what we set out to do, we accomplished, and this is a good thing. So let's replicate it and let's move away from here because that wasn't so successful. And I think when you're building something, you have more losses, I think, than you do success initially. And maybe that's good because if it all came quickly and easily, like anything else, you expect that all the time. But then you have to really start to bolster where are the weaknesses and make the thing a little bit more, I don't know, able to withstand the storms you're always going to hit.
Yeah. We talk a lot about this kind of, there's a lot of similarities, but oftentimes when you get into this little bit of a trap, making the comparison between sport and business.
For sure. You can really overdo that.
Closed system.
Yeah.
And versus an open system, there's much more out of your control.
Yeah.
And I think from being a team athlete, you have a role and you can be right. You can be really good at your role. But in business, I think it's more important to be effective than right. Right. And so what do I mean by that? I mean, like, do you care more about the outcome and trying to kind of encourage the system to get to an effective outcome rather than me being personally right?
Exactly. Because you want to replicate it.
You want to replicate it. And if you carbon copy your lessons from sports leadership or sports, you know, kind of your role within a team to business, you'll fall down a lot more often.
I think that's a good point. Really good point. Yeah. You have to have a system. And I think you always talked about that playing. So there were similarities, but I think when it comes to, if you happen to take down the champion, well, you still won. They're going to keep your name on that trophy. But if you can't replicate it, you still won that US Open or whatever it is. But in business, you'll be out of business.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. So I think you really have to have a system that works and adjusts. The world changes. And so you have to adjust to it, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of good athletes, I think part of being a good athlete and try to get even better is, how do you assess your own performance?
Yeah.
How do you analyze your own performance to get better?
Yeah.
And that you just don't show up every day and work hard and try to get better. You actually have to think about how to get better.
Where are the holes? What am I doing well? What am I not?
Yeah. So,
and for goaltending, I think that's really cool because you know you've played great games and you lost and you still feel like crap.
Yeah.
Or you've played an average game, but two of them went off the post and you walk away with a 2-1 win, like you're on a roll and you're like, no, I actually kind of shit the bed there, but I got away with it. And you better know that. And no coach can tell you that, you know, and no, your wife's not going to, you have to know that inside and you got to be super honest with yourself. And sometimes it's not an easy thing to be like, okay, the truth be told, I've got to work hard here. I let the team down there. You know, yes, they had 3 breakaways, but I lost 2 others that I should have had. And so that honest assessment's a hard thing. I've got 2 boys at play. And I think it's a really hard thing to even just have them have that balance where, you know, I was competitive when I was young. And if I lost, I was sour. I was not a good person to be around. And sometimes you still have to say, yeah, I did some things well. You can be wrong on either side of that equation, but you never want to let yourself off the hook because you're never going to get better.
Yeah. In business, though, I mean, when you take an L,
yep,
you can't let it define the next day.
100%.
Right.
You don't have time.
Right. Because there's so many of them.
Learn from it.
You have to learn from it.
I mean, it's an expensive lesson sometimes, right? Yeah. Use it.
Listen, Mike, it was great to have you here today.
Yeah.
And I just, before I let you go, I just want to say thank you, because throughout my entire career, you were always so supportive.
Wow.
And I really felt like I belonged here. And it was a cool feeling to have.
That's great.
As a Ranger legend, to make you feel me, make me feel that way throughout my career. So thank you for the support. And
well, thank you. I mean, you've said that before, and I think it's a very gracious thing to say. I didn't feel anything other than great young player, big smile on his face with nothing but potential and a respectful guy. And it's what you want in the organization that you call your family. And, you know, it's a really good thing. And I've got to know you over the years and just have so much respect for the way you approach the game. Like, I would have loved to play with you and just even learn from you. I just think excellence comes in many, many forms, but it always has these kind of key ingredients. And you approached your game with such professionalism. And I think that's, you know, you have a level of talent, no question, but I think the way you were so demanding of yourself rubbed off on other people, and it was really easy to see as a fan. And you've been entertaining for us for many years and still are. So thank you for having me today.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It's real,
yeah,
real
great to meet you.
Really
great,
to meet you.
Great thing, man. I'll be listening in. This is really cool. Really cool.
Welcome to the club. We're happy to have you as a member.
You might have to change your number.
Yeah, no. We'll put you on speaker anytime you want.
Thank you so much to Mike for joining us at Club 30 today.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. Thanks for everybody who tuned in. If you really enjoyed the conversation, and we hope you did, please smash that subscribe button. And by doing so, you'll become an honorary member of Club 30 with Hank, myself, Mike, and others.